Yeah, I can hear now. I set it up.
Ah, there you are.
Hello.
You can hear me, yes or no?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah, sorry I'm late. I thought Skype would work, but it didn't.
Oh, yeah, Skype I think can dial into the landline. At
It
least
wasn't letting
I
me, and then I had to reinstall, and then it wanted to charge me $2.99, so I installed this.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for being here. The regular crowd is either not coming tonight or, stumbling in late. I've just
Well.
been kicking back on my own, so it's maybe it's appropriate. It's an opportunity for the two of us to talk, just us.
That's great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, pleasure. So I read your email. Thank you. I replied to it. I don't know if you got a chance to see that.
Yeah, I read it. Thank you for the reply.
My pleasure.
It seemed to clarify some things.
Yeah, it's a tricky business. What we're up against is ourselves, and we're formidable and magical. We are a legend at being able to confuse what's at hand, and we're also quite remarkably capable of unwinding or untwisting, the knot of how we relate to our own present experience.
Yeah, I feel like I'm in this giant mental Chinese finger trap.
Yes, it's funny, we were having breakfast the other day and or lunch the other day, and someone mentioned exactly that same metaphor, that the mind it can appear like a Chinese finger trap. Yeah. You see, you could say the habit that we're so accustomed to is reporting, right, upon the curious nature of present experience. And we report not just verbally, but of course we report to ourselves internally, right, through thought, through association, subtle texture. And this reporting can drive us nuts.
Yeah,
Yeah.
endless
And
commentary.
yeah, and that's right. We're begging for the reflex of commentary to please just shut the fuck up and leave me alone. Yeah. And it's an exquisite kind of suffering. I mean, it's kind of well, it's a remarkable observation that whatever awareness is or isn't, and no one can really say, it has the power of, let's say, bifurcating its own curiosity and making it look like it's in search of itself. And this ongoing inquiry or right reporting reflex makes it appear as if you are something other than yourself, in search of yourself, and overwhelmed and beleaguered by this sports announcer that just won't shut up.
Very,
Yeah.
very well said. Very confusing.
Yeah,
Very
and that's
believable.
to say that that's untrue would be misleading, right? I mean, it is true. This comments and cajoles and creates and ruminates and behaves in a vengeful manner or a anticipatory or acquisitive manner, right? A regretful manner. Right? We're bounced around all over the place by a million and one, call it emotive proclivities from moment to moment, and we don't get any psychic rest.
Yeah, I haven't found any.
Yep. Oh, God. So this madness, you could say is a least common denominator or lowest common denominator and drives pretty much everyone and anyone to whatever host of remedies appeals to them, right? Alcohol, drugs, relationships, workaholism, fame, creativity, right? The meditation cushion, the mystery school, right? The exotic journey to Machu Picchu, Sedona, swimming with dolphins, right?
Yeah,
Yeah,
everybody's got
so,
something.
yeah, I mean, everyone's running about depending on their degree of discretionary income and time, right? Entertaining themselves as best they can, either according to their budget or sometimes in excess of their budget, and then ringing up a fuckload of credit card debt. Right? So, I mean, one of our let's say regular friends has had exactly that experience, ringing up just an unbearable amount of American Express credit card debt, from years ago when he was a younger person. And now he meets with other folks and does Debtors Anonymous meetings, right? Yeah, so that's cool. He realizes that one of his ways of medicating the angst of the inner reporter that won't shut the fuck up was to, use credit cards to self-soothe, right? Okay. So, yeah, it's good and kind of refreshing to speak this way because without, let's say getting overly emotionally invested in our personal angst, we can at least see with some humor, the mechanism of our unbearable neurosis.
I laughed
Cool.
like the whole day after sending that email, after rereading it. I was like, this is just nuts, like,
Yeah, nice. I mean, and this is a great symptom of, you could say, the unfolding of these encumbered points of view, right? These, if you want to use the Kundalini methodology, these are, cluster points in the Ida and Pingala, right? Yeah, the Kundalini or the subtle energy is not flowing well, psychologically, physiologically, because of these, nadis and grantis, right? Locks and, you could say these locks, at least in that Kundalini approach, are like mini spiral galaxies that just won't resolve. So that means the consciousness repeats in on itself, right? And that's the nuisance of our thinking. We repeat in on ourselves, and we haven't had a creative thought in 1,000 years. And we are so sick and tired of the repetitive nature of our own reflection that, we're fit to be tied. I mean, some people take the intensity of this lack of novelty and take their own lives, right? Yeah. And who could argue with them, right?
Yeah,
So,
definitely not me.
yeah. So, partly what we're up against is a profound lack of novelty. And that lack of novelty can become depression, paralysis, overwhelm, deep fatigue, right? Sorrow, grief. And, of course, all kinds of ways of acting in and acting out as a desperate attempt to medicate it. That's how this fucker rolls.
Oh man, yeah.
It's bad. It really is. It really sucks. It's really bad. I mean, just to, to wave a flag at it and say, "Oh, well, it is unreal. You are not real," is bullshit. Because no, this fucker's real. This is kicking my ass. This is ruining my day. Day after day, ruining my day. Yeah. So it's not really useful to just dismiss it as, being unreal, because it's so compelling, it's so thick, it's so durable, right?
It's lasted a long time for me.
Yeah, exactly. Oh God. So, who knows? Maybe this thing works the way it does, as part of a flawed or curious maturing process for us to, what could you say, cough up enough free energy to try a new strategy, to look deeply enough at it, metaphorically, in hopes that something we could possibly do might assist us in the transmutation of this psychic incarceration.
Yeah, I'm pretty much down to try anything at this point.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, if there were a strategy that worked, you could say everyone would be using it. I mean,
Yeah.
I don't know how many millions of people, read and listened to Eckhart Tolle and the cogency and poignancy of his, call it, power of now teachings. How many millions of people have read, Ram Dass since the mid 70s, starting with Be Here Now, through his career? How many millions have read the poetic, works of Thich Nhat Hanh, right? Poetry and Compassion in Motion. Or how many hundreds of thousands or millions of people have become acquainted with Byron Katie and the work? All right. And all of this shit is, great. I mean, like, it's all a bridge from somewhere to somewhere, though, honestly speaking, there never was a from somewhere, and there certainly isn't a to somewhere. But these activities, contemplative and otherwise, you could say are, they're fun, they're entertaining, they're better than going bowling for some.
Yeah, I definitely, I don't know, enjoy the challenge, if you will, or I don't know, better than bowling, yeah. Better than the
Better than
rules, I
bowling,
guess, yeah.
yeah. When it shows up in your life or someone's life that some a contemplative adventure of some kind turns out to be better than bowling, well, that's it. You're a card carrying seeker. That's your deal, right? You're not going to
Yeah.
go back. You can't go back. You can't go back to the bowling alley, and even if you roll a 300, you're just not going to go back. 'Cause you've been, drop kicked, drop kicked into a new wave, a new dimension of your, personal adventure. So that's that. The question is then, all right, so I'm fucked. I'm tired of being fucked. I'm less offended than I was a week ago because I'm so fucked. I'm just not, I'm not clever anymore, right? Because there's that, you could say that there's that phase that we go through when we're definitely fatigued. We've had enough of this. But you could say we're still clever, right? We're still defended, We haven't been so fully baked that we're completely available quite yet. And that's a, that's a phase. That runs for a while. And thankfully, this puzzle we're working with kicks our ass. You know, it's like a solvent, right? It's so demanding, and you could say debilitating in a curiously positive psychic way, that it strips all of our defensiveness and cleverness and bargaining out of us. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, no. I feel like a lot of times I, get frustrated or, the suffering becomes more intense and I feel like, all right, just keep going, try even harder and maybe you'll just wear yourself out, maybe you'll just burn yourself out and
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for the metaphor of burning oneself out, for the habit of reflective and refractive mind to reconsider itself. No question about it. Now, when that shows up, when that part of our, adventure shows up, when we are kind of curiously and courageously ready to submit ourselves to something, anything new, that's a great moment, because you couldn't have cultivated that moment by will alone, right?
yeah, definitely not.
Yeah, I mean, you can't do it. You can't just will yourself to move from square one to square, two, just on will alone, because this whatever this process is magical by nature, and there are no levers or strings or buttons. It's all chutes and ladders, and we don't have control over the presence of the chute or the ladder. You're kind of forced to be an impatient witness to your own liberation.
Yeah, impatient. That definitely barely scratches the surface.
Yeah, I know. I know. Yeah. I mean, I wish we could, turn up the fire, right? Accelerate the process, step on the pedal, right? Get a higher octane fuel. But we can't. We're curiously invited, which is a euphemism for forced, right? Against our will, you could even say, to simply kick back and bear, right? The organic process of our own liberation.
That's a rough way to think about it, but
It's true. It just is, because you see, you or I or no one is in charge of the quality or the corners of the geometry of their consciousness, right? You're not. You're not in charge of it. You're not Ryan by virtue of checklist, right? By virtue of consent, by virtue of agreement, by virtue of schematic, right?
I
I
often
mean,
wonder
you're you
how.
spontane you're you spontaneously, right? Yeah, so if you suck, it's not your fault. If you rock out, it's not your fault.
But I would
So,
claim it
well,
if
I know.
I
Well,
did.
but you see, that's what makes the suffering kind of what would you say, a little bit painful, right? Because you're claiming it. It's my suffering, right? MY, my suffering, right? Yeah, that's claiming, right? That kind of it gives it a little punch, right? It's like claiming with a bullet, suffering with a bullet, because of the claiming. And again, you can't help the claiming either, right?
No, I definitely can't prevent it. That's just happening too.
Yeah. So, you're a magical creature just as you are, with really, no credit that you could take and no fault that you could be accused of. And the nuance of the way that you claim, or the nuance of the way that you wake up to the myth of claiming is also appearing organically and spontaneously in your, say, innate intelligence, right? And we're not talking about book knowledge, right? We're just talking about a curious form of sensitivity, a curious form of fascination, a curious form of affection that you have for yourself. Doing itself. Huh. And that, you could say, perspective can sometimes, let's say, be helpful, right? Because the claiming won't stop, but the intensity of the claiming, or our the anger and impatience that we may experience on account of the claiming can be possibly somewhat ameliorated, because we see that the claiming is not volitional.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You can Good. Sort of step away from the claiming, and that happens as well.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's funny that you could say a little bit of the fresh air that may show up is that the claiming continues, the agony continues, the unrelenting commentary and storytelling continues, the frustration, the impatience, all of these things continue, but it's possible even in the midst of that catastrophic pile of horseshit, the claiming relaxes.
Well, I wait for that day.
I hear you. Absolutely. Yep. Yep. And as the claiming relaxes again of its own accord, right? What happens is you simply discover, and it's perhaps even nearly imperceptible, you discover the curious capacity to occupy your present experience without being pushed around by impatience or becoming or disappointment, even in the midst of, you know, the reflex of claiming. It's strange. You see, like, we typically think that we're of the nature of, let's call it one, can we say one degree of awareness, right? I, Ryan, or I, Jeff, are comprised of kind of one degree of awareness, which is the way that I typically encounter my experience, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, but it's also possible that you can get a glimpse of the observation, or let's call it the suggestion that you are of a multiplicity of possibilities, that your awareness is not monotone, that your awareness is multivalent and simultaneously so. So even the familiarity that you have with, let's call it, the suffering and impatient Ryan, right, appears in the beatitude of an awareness that you are also made of, that is unafflicted. Make sense?
Yeah, but it's like all the, quote, bad stuff is just like so much in the forefront.
Yes. Yep, that's right, forefront. Yep. That's right. And so this, you know, strange organic shift in, you could say, perspective or locus is that what's in the forefront, and I'm not discrediting how intense or even real it is, right? But just, you could say, just to the left, just to the right, just behind and not far away is, you could say, Ryan as a disembodied attention or disembodied curiosity in which this suffering is roiling. I mean, you only know that you're suffering by virtue of a curious capacity of, call it being, right? Suffering is not isolated, is it? Suffering is a curious set of symptoms, somatic and psychiatric and emotional, appearing in, right, the fullness and the richness of you.
Yeah.
Yep. Cool. And it's easy for us to, you could say, identify with the suffering as the only show in town happening inside of me, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like the existence versus non-existence. Like, the existence part's like, it's loud, you know, it's clear, it's right there.
Yep. And so you don't notice, or let's say you don't notice that you're, let's call it relaxed non-existence, is also just as present, right? Because the reflex of your attention is associated with the evidence of the suffering. You don't, and so you notice, let's say, less often or with less confidence that this suffering is also occurring in your unafflictable nature. And they're at a minimum on equal footing. But the habit is to reach for the storylines associated with suffering.
Yeah, the habit's strong, definitely.
Yes, even Thich Nhat Hanh referred to it exactly that way. He would call it habit energy. And part of his, you know, mindfulness training was to assist, you know, his students and call it, you know, worldwide body into using mindfulness as a means to break habit energy and play around with the textures of presence. I mean, Eckhart Tolle is teaching exactly the same thing, right? Come to recognize the texture of presence, which is the same mindfulness as Thich Nhat Hanh, the same mindfulness as Jon Kabat-Zinn, the same mindfulness as Adyashanti, right? The same wild attention that Byron Katie emphasizes in the work.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, all the same.
Yeah.
I mean, even the Dzogchen guys and the Kashmiri Shaivism guys and the, you know, Ashtanga Yoga guys and gals are, you could say, ultimately, if not immediately, also referencing the same, you know, let's say, curious perspective, which is presence unadulterated, presence unafflicted by imagination, by projection, by resistance, right? Bracing and recoil, disappointment. They're all, it's the same fucking teaching, right? The world over, across all of, you know, these various offerings, let's say, right?
Yeah, I noticed the same thing, you know, years ago in the beginning of my seeking, you know, you're reading things and a lot of different terms and most of it seems, you know, seemed to go over my head. Then
yeah.
Towards the end, you know, eventually it seemed to click, like, oh, well, not every teacher, but almost every teacher is like talking about the same thing. And
yes. I mean, even
questions, so to speak, I guess.
Even Nirsagadatta, if, you know, if you could kind of distill some methodology, right, in his expositions, was saying, hey, you know, come to sit in awareness, simply interested in the presence of awareness, not the content of thought, right, not the consequence of thought, not the bracing and the planning and the defending and the accusation, but in the textural presence of consciousness itself. Remember, I mean, I'm sure you've seen, you know, some videos of the late, great Jimi Hendrix pushing a Stratocaster in the front, you know, right in the face of a Marshall stack, right? And wailing the fuck out of that feedback. That image come to mind? Do you ever, you know, get a chance to see videos of Jimi Hendrix or Woodstock or wherever?
I mean, yeah, I've seen some clips. I'm not the
Yeah.
biggest
So
Jimi Hendrix fan,
you
but
have an appreciation of
yeah.
a master rock guitarist working the feedback, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's what Nirsagadatta was saying. Work the feedback. What you primarily are is disembodied fascination. And what are you fascinated by? Well, in our earlier stages, we're fascinated by the content of suffering. So much so that it drives us insane. And then, of course, the claiming, right, makes it even worse. But the suffering and the claiming are symptoms, you could say, of disembodied fascination. So naturally, what occurs is that we're like, oh, wait a second. Suffering is just a kind of a trivial symptom. So is claiming. It's just a trivial symptom. What I'm really about, or what I'm beginning to, sniff out, is simply the presence of my own fascination. And rather than trying to insist that that fascination be secure, right, in its future, financially and intellectually, sexually, right, in all the ways that we want to assert ourselves and win, right? So instead of being completely hogtied or overwhelmed by the impatient anticipation of guaranteed success on a material level, we start to kick back from some of the demands of that consciousness and learn to rest from time to time, a little bit here and a little bit there, a pinch here and a pinch there, in the recognition of our own innate fascination. And fascination without a destination is a lot different, right, than the impatience that accompanies, the gloom and doom of myself.
Yeah, things have definitely relaxed for me. I guess pretty recent, but some years ago, I guess too, and they seem to be relaxing more and more.
That's where it goes. That's just where it goes. Now, the relaxing for a time is measurable, we could say, on the human index scale, right? Ryan, as a human born of a certain height and stature, male with this quality of education or employment, savings and debt and friends and whatever, you've got, you're a, I mean, you're an encyclopedia unto yourself, right? You're a richly dynamic life force, engaged with all kinds of curious relationships, some of them really sweet, and some of them, you wish you could do without.
It seems like though a lot of times I just, uncover some new, I don't know, issue that's been buried, but and even when that relaxes, there still is like this dissatisfaction or like waiting for like the big relax,
Yes.
and that then
Yes.
I'm like, oh, this is just another trap, and it just kind of
Right.
perpetuates.
Yes. That you could say that that kernel or the insistence of the myth of becoming, right, won't leave you alone.
No.
And so that becoming is, it's kind of a bracing reflex to the nature of, psychological time, of you being a person, speeding into your future, right?
Yeah, I guess it is limited to time.
Sure. Sure. I mean, the bane of becoming is, you could say, synonymous with confidence in psychological time.
It is convincing, definitely.
Very convincing.
Despite, a lot of evidence to the contrary.
A ton. Yeah, I mean, you know, as one considers, whether contemplatively or otherwise, the bizarre evaporative nature of present experience, you know, sooner or later you'd think, God, how could I be investing in having some kind of assurances about my future when my present is just always revealing itself to be, you know, unreliable and evaporative? This is, you know, a typical neurosis pattern. We neglect to see that our present experience is unreliable and evaporative, but we want our future to be certain. Well, how can our future be certain if everything that we've encountered thus far, including this very present moment, is just, you know, disappearing from out of thin air, appearing and disappearing out of thin air as a simultaneity? How could I be investing in certainty, security, accumulation, happiness in a future that I don't actually have?
Yeah, it does seem pretty crazy, but it's, again, I guess it's just the habit.
It's a habit.
Yeah.
So the, you know, you could say the path of kicking this around, the path of loitering, right? Is kind of a relaxed approach. No commitment is made, right? No money down. No practices prescribed or otherwise. The loitering path is we just chill out and kick it around. So for the several times that we meet each week, you could say we treat each other to an atmosphere or an opportunity to loiter at will and take a break from the introverted clutter, right? Of, you know, being alone or left to our own devices without the benefit of some, you know, humorous revelation. That's the loitering path. Just kick it around. Just hang out. Watch what the mind does, how it frames itself, the vocabulary that it uses. How the, you know, reflex of becoming and bracing and future gets set in motion. How sticky they are, right? The nature of our belief in them. And so when you do that, you could say, in camaraderie, right? Through casual conversation, then it has the capacity to dismantle the seriousness of the fundamental neurosis from which you could say everyone is suffering.
Yeah, I've never really had that camaraderie in my search. I mean, I've talked with a few people here and there, but none of my friends or relatives are seriously interested in it. And
this is common, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, most of the folks that, you know, kind of flow in and out of Night Sky Sangha, you know, they all can say the same thing. None of their friends, even perhaps their spouses, family members, are all that interested in this Gordian's knot, in untying this knot.
Yeah, it does seem to be even almost a ridiculous thing to be interested in.
For most people, it makes no sense. It's just a pile of gibberish.
Yeah.
Despite the popularity of Thich Nhat Hanh, of the Dalai Lama, of Eckhart Tolle, of Adya Shanti, and others that we've mentioned, despite the profound, you know, commercial popularity of some of these, you know, major voices, still they're by and large ignored by the the general culture.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have too wide of a frame of reference, but I would say most people are kind of just window shopping. I mean, this works. This feels like it's like pulling hairs a lot of times, you know, and it's like, why, why do I do this? But I can't really seem to help myself. So
no, yeah. once you've been inoculated, you know, you cannot go back.
Yeah, no, I definitely felt that, you know, it's kind of just like doing its thing. And I even had some people, you know, friends, not like close friends, but ask me like, you know, why are you doing this? And I'm like, I don't know. It's just,
I don't really. Yeah. Honestly speaking, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not comfortable to have to say, honestly speaking, I don't know. You know, what you call my life is just a weird unfolding over which I absolutely have no control. And that's the same thing. That's also true for your friends, but, you know, they might shy away from admitting it.
Yeah, I mean, you really have to look. I mean, you know, admit it.
You do.
You have to look, and then you have to, like, continue looking. Because I look away for an instant, and I'm just back doing my thing, like, you know. Oh, man.
Yep. That's how, you could say that's how elastic and durable ignorance is. It will take up its default position as a storyteller, right? In an instant.
Yeah, I think it's Muji who says, oh, you know, relax and be in your natural state. And I'm like, all right, I can do that, but, you know, for how long? And then I turn around and it's like,
yeah,
well, I've been back in the old mode for, you know, half a day now. What the heck just happened?
Yep.
And it's like natural state. I mean, it seems like
Muji's not wrong, but it doesn't really translate as a practical advice, does it?
Well, I mean, I guess I can't really measure that, but perhaps. Perhaps not. Why would you say it's not practical? Do you mean like?
Well, because that's not how this actually occurs.
Hmm.
You know, you're not of the nature of agency to be able to take Muji's sincere advice. You can't do it. Guess what? Neither could Muji.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I see what you're saying though. Yeah. That's not the entirety of the talk he was giving, but yeah.
Right. No, it's not possible for us to adapt or adopt a strategy or a solution to the presence of ever liquidating consciousness.
But that doesn't prevent me from trying, at least.
Isn't it curious? That's right. It doesn't prevent you from applying your vitality to yourself.
Yeah.
And you may think, or I might think, or one may think that, you know, we're in this for inner peace, right? To ameliorate the discomfort of the unrelenting news reporter. But that's not why we're in this. Even though it makes good sense that someone would want to relieve suffering, right? But that's not why we're in this. It's stranger than that. It's not like you are a human who's suffering from undisciplined thinking. That's not what's actually happening. And that's why advice like Muji's or Thich Nhat Hanh's or anybody's advice doesn't actually work. In terms of applying oneself or benefiting in a cause-effect manner, right? Because you're not really a human suffering from the undignifying indulgences of thought, runaway thought. What you really are, arguably, is way stranger than that. And the transmutation that you're clearly going through on account of the things that you read and the videos you've watched and the conversations that you've had, right? You're clearly in the midst of a transmutation from dogmatic association with the myth of reference to something that's unspeakable. That's what's driving this. Not the urge to stop suffering. Suffering and not suffering, that's like for Buddhists, it's bullshit.
Yeah, it seemed to be, you know, at the start of my journey, you know, definitely. But now at this point, it's like, I don't even care about that. Pain, no pain, I'm just suffering, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
There's a deeper revelation, you know, tickling you. That is more formidable, if I may use that word, than even the urgency to stop suffering. The transmutative urgency is more potent, more powerful than, you could say, the human interest in not suffering. That makes it a journey of... what would you say? A journey of love rather than a journey of disappointment, right? It's one thing to ameliorate disappointment. It's another thing to find out what this is with vigor and glee.
Yeah, you're not just like running away from something.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You're not simply begging for relief. You're actually become interested in your own transcendent nature. Yep. That's how this rolls. Yeah, so it's not, you know, it's not really necessary, really, for anyone to sit on a park bench like Eckhart Tolle, or rest in your so-called, right, natural condition like Muji.
I wish you could, man. Anything. I wish you could. I'd go build a park bench outside right now.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, oh, let's build a park bench and get a heater and just chill the fuck out.
Yeah.
You see, if it's an adventure, if it's a process of unfolding, if it's an organic, artistic expression, right? You're an art installation. Your life is an art installation. And what's happening is that you're, you know, going through a phase shift. And that's what's really happening. So adopting somebody's advice, you know, or spiritual strategy is just belittling. It won't work. You're bigger than that. You're better than that. You're more creative than that. You're weirder than that.
Yeah, it seems like sometimes I even have a problem with my, you know, with infinity itself. It seems like, oh, why does it have to be, like, so infinite it can pretend to not be itself and,
you know, be this far. That's great.
There, you know?
Yeah, really, no, I think that's a practical disappointment.
Yeah.
Oh, the fucking thing is so infinite, it's really, really bothering me.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Great insight to have, why not? Yeah. I don't think it's going to take your suggestion to heart, but I hear you.
I've been with you thus far.
It's probably got a good chuckle that, you know, Ryan's got this great idea that I should stop being this infinite so that I can't continue to confuse myself into unutterable stupidity.
Oh man, yeah.
Nice move.
Like a great thought, yeah.
Yeah, not about to happen.
Oh, no. Doesn't seem likely.
No.
Or even possible, yeah.
Or even possible, yeah. But it's a great, I mean, it's creative. I mean, it's a great sense of humor. For infinity to look at itself and say, tisk, tisk, this really has got to stop.
Oh, man. Sounds much worse when you say it out loud.
Yeah, true. Yeah. That's that. mean, how are we going to cage infinity? How are we going to apply, a spiritual strategy to it? How are we going to insist or make demands, on our experience through a vehicle of, mindfulness or cultivating, ethical behavior or giving up love, for instance? It's not going to work, or has. You're an art exposition. You're an art installation. And so the way your life rolls and the associations and the suffering and the disappointments and the impatience and the insecurity and the spiritual insight is, it doesn't give a fuck what you think. It's just doing you.
Yeah, really? When I have like those, I don't know, those thoughts come like, oh, can't do all this and that, and then my mind's instantly like, all right, then I'll just do nothing. But that's like an active
doesn't work
nothing, which is just the next step. And then, the next step in the continuing pattern on the escalator.
Yeah.
I seem to be walking in place on the escalator backwards or something.
Yep. Absolutely. So, again, these are poignant insights into the nature of reflect. Mind and the, let's say, uber awareness in which mind does what it does. We're never going to get any mileage from mind because mind is not attached to anything. Its steering wheel has no linkage. Mind is just an always after the fact partial commentary. So any association that we have with what is appearing in mind is disappointing, is unsatisfactory, because mind is just myth, it's smoke. It appears in the real, right, as the real. It's not nothing. Mind is not nothing. It's as good a symptom of anything else that's appearing within the pageantry of the inclusivity of reality. For shit sure. But any association that we have with mind as conjuring for us a utilitarian reality, well, that's sorely mistaken.
Now, do you mean purely like thought-based like dreams, or do you mean like...
Everything.
I mean, I can see that the mind is just an after-the-fact commentary, but then...
Yes.
It still has, like, some effect. Like, emotions will happen after some thoughts occur. And now, that doesn't prove causation, but they seem to be interconnected. Now, is that just, an emotional mind? And there's another aspect of mind or another similar thing?
Well... There's only one thing, right? And that is apparition appearing to fascination. And those may sound like two, but they're not. Mind, emotion, space, time, feeling, dreaming, acting, suffering, transcending. These are all apparition. Appearing in disembodied fascination. And the apparition and the fascination are not two.
Another trap.
So let's say again.
And I said another trap. That line of thinking, I mean.
Yeah. That's right. And so you see... You could say the common way in which we engage with the miracle of our present experience is from the vantage point of two, right?
Yeah.
You're the subject to whom events and circumstances occur, and events and circumstances include thought, include emotion, include decisions, include the consequence of things, right?
Yeah.
So everything... down to the cockroach's underbelly, is apparitionally appearing in or as disembodied fascination or disembodied interest. So you are both the permutation and the fascination, and I hope you don't mind my saying so, you're also neither.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
Yeah. So that's a little bizarre, you know, use of language for, you know, in the context of typical human vocabulary. There's only one thing. It's apparition appearing to fascination. Apparition and fascination are not two. And you are both all and neither none.
Well, I wish that was my experience.
It is your experience, not to impose anything upon you.
Yeah, no. But I mean, like...
It's the only experience we could actually have.
Yeah.
What's obscuring it? What's obscuring the view or the confidence that you might want to place in that view is simply the habit energy of small ideation, right? Through the filter index or the filter lens of what we might call humans or primates. So you think or insist that your experience is what you think and insist that it is, don't you?
Yeah.
You'd be foolish not to, right? So that's what happens. We think and insist that our experience is what we think and insist that it is. Guess what? You're mistaken.
It's just a label then.
Yes. You see, reference and locus occur spontaneously. It's not like they occurred when you were conceived, or when you were born, or when you started shouting no at 2 years old, or when you were an adolescent, or when you became a competent, you know, exquisitely expressive young man. No. Locus and reference occurs right now. Our belief or confidence in locus and reference is, you could say, the engine of what keeps us small. Right? Like we said earlier, the tendency to cling or to claim, right?
Yeah.
You're not, you or none of us are in control of the reflex to claim. But it might be useful to see that claiming and the reflex to claim, or the belief systems that suggest that you know what your present experience are presently appearing and, thankfully, mistaken. The beauty of this for you and for any of us is that, thankfully, you don't know what your present experience is. And therefore, it would be silly for you to have some confidence in what you think or insist that it is. Because the fact is you don't know what it is. And I'm not singling you out as a guy that's somehow small, slow, or stupid. Nobody knows what the fuck it is. Nobody knows.
Yeah, no, I didn't take it that way.
Yeah, that includes Muji. He doesn't know either.
Yeah.
So our suffering, you could say, has a direct link with the bizarre confidence that we place in ourselves to think or insist that we know what this is. Therefore, if that's perhaps even just a little bit true, right, then becoming acquainted, you know, hopefully humorously, with the observation that you don't know what this is starts to unseat you from a belligerent confidence that you didn't even know you had.
That you didn't even know you had, yeah.
It's true. the human being that suffers from a belligerent confidence that they don't even know they have. So you could say it's our job, together, right, to whittle it away.
Yeah, that question's always been there for me, even from a young age, like, you know, how did I get to here? And why am I not somewhere else, so to speak, you know, as some other person, you know?
Yeah. Fun question.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, it's very easy for us to lie to ourselves nonstop on the cushion. Because we're enjoying, you could say, the privacy of our own private Idaho, our own isolated clown show of bullshit. So there's something that we miss in the tradition of introverted, extended mindfulness practice on a cushion. Because this is so good at lying to itself, we don't even notice that we are dwelling inside a hellacious cycle of thinking that we know what this is. Even if we apply ourselves to, you know, a good dismantling, whether it's a Vipassana approach, you know, a Dzogchen approach, a Kashmiri approach, call it what you will, we're still up against a prodigious capacity to lie to ourselves when left to our own devices. That's why loitering is more effective.
You mean because like with a group or
yes.
out in the world?
Well, ideally with other twisted seeker fuckers like yourself that for some strange reason are just drawn, right, to get to the bottom of this thing. Right? There's no point for you to walk into Redner's and strike up this conversation with someone behind the deli counter. You know, unless the guy was a secret Sufi and then could, you know, whip your ass. Right? You want to hang out with other inoculees. You want to hang out with people that have been smitten by the same virus as you, that have gotten to a point where they're undefended and more motivated to get to the bottom of this than in defending who and what they think they are. And when you keep the company of those kinds of folks and you spend a little time, you know, loitering and kicking this around without any pressure, right? Without any performance anxiety, without any need to, you know, have some kind of cathartic demonstration to draw attention to oneself, because that's all bullshit. You just kick it around. You're just yourself. You're keeping an eye on the curious and maddening way that this insists that it knows what its present experience is. And that's how you break the back of the beast.
And do you think that's, you know, on, you know, some energetic level where you're sharing in that way? Or do you mean, you know, intellectually where you're able to?
All by magic.
Well, yeah, ultimately, yeah.
Not ultimately, presently.
Yeah.
This encounter is magic. Every moment of your life is magic. Even the dogged insistence that you have, or one may suffer from, which is, I know what this is, occurs by magic. And the unraveling of that also occurs by magic as magic. So that we're even having this conversation is the shit. And what we're doing, you could say, is feeding each other, right? For instance, instead of jumping on a burger and taking my bite out of it first, I offer my burger to you. You take the first bite, you know, and you offer your burger to me, and you say, "Hey, no, you take the first bite." That's how we hang out in an undefended manner. That's how we hang out with a kind of willingness to feed each other and be fed by each other. And that opens the doors to magic as a conscious event. I call it loitering.
Yeah, I've never heard that term before.
Yeah. This works, at least in my experience, best when it's casual, when it's informal, when we offer ourselves without, you know, any fanfare or attention seeking. We're just kicking back, playing with consciousness as it plays with us, getting a glimpse of unafflictable nature. Discovering that we actually can find some confidence and affection in unafflictable nature. And that occurs by magic. It's not the consequence of intellectual application.
Now, is there then spontaneous intellectual changing that happens along the way, would you say, or?
Well, sure. Look at the drafting of our conversation this evening, right? It's loaded with, you know, some really nice ping pong shots. So it appears, you know, intellectual, or may appear to be based on vocabulary, right? Or the exchanging of conversation. But what it really is a transcendent display.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rock and roll. And when we can hang out and get acquainted with the presence of this transcendent display, that is, well, I mean, I don't love the word, but it's powerful, it's potent. It's a very, very potent solvent. It just is. And it acts on the rust in our mind. It dissolves the rust of our confidence, of our dogmatism. It dissolves the rust of imagining that something happened to us a moment before now. It dissolves the rust of forever bracing so that the future will show up in a way that's palatable to us. It dissolves fear. It dissolves becoming. That's just what it does. You have as much of it as the next guy. Ramana Maharshi didn't have any more of this magic than you do. He didn't. You got it all. All you have to do is buy a peacock and walk around in a white diaper and you're set. Just kidding, don't do
I think I'd be out of place if I wasn't
that.
what's that mountain ever natural.
Yeah, been there, done that. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a curious process to for any of us to get acquainted with the potency, poignancy of our own present magical experience. And as our confidence in what we think it is dissolves, we're treated to, you could say, a different view, a different way of loitering, hanging out. In a sense, we're doing exactly what Muji suggested that we do, but indirectly, right? Like askance, askew. We're sneaking up on it as it sneaks up on us, rather than committing ourselves to a certain posture. Make sense?
Yeah.
Like I said, Muji wasn't wrong. It's just the... it's the way that you apply it, because you're an art installation. You're not a human. That's the night sky sangha thing, in a, you know, in a word or two. Wouldn't it be fun if this were just as it is and didn't need to turn into anything better? Right?
Yeah,
wouldn't
I
it
know.
Be fun? Wouldn't it be fun if the guy that you thought you were, right, was not the guy you thought you were, and you didn't have to become anything better or different? You didn't have to continue to apply yourself, you know, diligently or frustratingly, to be hot on the trail of some kind of enlightenment event which will finally release you from all sorrow. How about, nah, not necessary.
Yeah, it's good. Then, you know, my mind then thinks that, oh, but then something will happen, kind of not really happening in the happening, but... So.
Your mind is as good as anyone's to draw conflicting conclusions forever.
Yeah.
And that's cool. It's like, okay, mind is crazy. I get it. Mind is absolutely, you know, buggers. I get it. And so mind can say anything it wants to say. It will say anything it wants to say. It will, just because it is what it is, you know, do its best to attract your attention or your affection or your interest. And it's okay if you give it your attention and your affection and your interest, because it can't really hurt you. It can't really help you. It's just kind of like, you know, having a weird ant living inside your head that mumbles at the Wheel of Fortune. It's like, okay, I'm talking to myself now. I hear you. What else is on your mind? I mean, I'll say that out loud. You know, if I'm on a mind roll, I'm like, oh, you got something going on, don't you? All right, well, you have my full attention. What is it you want to tell me? You know? Sure. What are you insisting on convincing me of now? What is it? So I'll just sometimes, for fun, you know, banter with myself, even out loud, more or less saying, okay, I'm schizophrenic, I'm down with that, what's on your mind? And what's funny, that as you do that, as you've kind of out yourself, you know, it's like, oh, nothing really. I didn't really have anything to say.
Yeah, it goes away when you're focused on it.
Yeah, when you give it, I mean, some people say, like, you know, Eckhart might say, turn your attention elsewhere, to sights, to sounds, to texture, to radiance, right? To, you know, profound sacred geometry. And that's a good strategy also. But you can also turn your attention exactly to mind, but instead of doing it introvertedly, do it expressively. It's like, okay, I'm listening. What's up? And it will, you know, typically recoil. Because it only rolls when you're half paying attention to it. if you give it your full attention, it becomes deaf, dumb, and blind. When you give mind your full attention, it's like, oh, whoa, I don't really have anything to say. Sorry, I bothered you. But it'll drive you nuts if you only give it half attention. And like Eckhart suggests, or others, you know, if you can accomplish it, and, you know, it's worth playing with, if you give it no attention, it will also, you know, kind of starve out. So you win on two counts, and you lose on one. If you give it no attention, you win. If you give it total attention, you win. If you give it half attention, that's when you're fucked. So the odds are 2-1 that you're going to liberate.
That's an interesting statistic to pull out.
It's 2-1. It's 2-1, man. Don't be a loser.
Yeah, that's a great reference point to take, definitely.
Yeah. If you give your mind full attention and just say, okay, you have my full attention, what do you want? It will naturally... Hi, Suzanne. It'll naturally abate. If you give your mind no attention and just attune to the miraculous palette of your total experience, your mind will naturally abate. If you give it half attention, it's going to run your life.
Well, can I just pipe in?
Please pipe in.
You know, from a psychological kind of experiment, they do those things where they have people, like, schedule in their worrying, you know, from 3 to 3:15, and they find that that's very helpful for people who worry. So, so that what you're saying makes sense. Yeah.
Yep. If you give mind, which only operates as fuzz, your full attention, then it can't command the space. It's only through half attention and claiming that the distortions of mind will seduce you into certainty.
It's like a controlled burn in a forest fire.
Yep. Yeah, you're right. I mean, yogically speaking, one engages in a controlled burn. And, you know, just as a plaything, right? Not as a commitment of any kind. Just as a plaything. We don't want to, we want to try to avoid coming away with too many tautologies or strategies or takeaways.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
you.
Yeah, because one is just,
yeah.
You know, Ryan and I were chatting, an art installation, right? An improvisational art installation occurring autopoetically.
Yes, right, and I know the psychology isn't all that poetic sometimes, so.
But. Yeah, right, sometimes. You know, well, in the hands of Fritz Perls and people like that, it might have been very poetic, but in the hands of most, not so much.
No.
Yeah.
Cognitive behavioral therapy is kind of boring.
But. Yep. I can see Francine logged in. She's not on the camera, and her mic's turned off. Uh-oh, she turned her mic on. But we still can't hear her because it's always a technical problem with Fuse meetings.
She turned it on and you're not even talking about Chinese food.
I know. Well, Ryan, thanks for thanks a lot for the email correspondence and for making the time to have this conversation. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And even if you don't, I enjoyed it enough for both of us.
Yeah, no, you're quite welcome, and thank you. It's